Call to order the March 8, 2011 session of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Welcome to everyone. We have a very long list of bills that we're going to be dealing with today, so we're going to have to go through this in fairly rapid succession. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3391, and I'm going out of order for the express purpose that we have a witness, at least one, who has traveled a very great distance and would like to accommodate her. And on that basis, Ms. Bannerman, would you please?
Chair?
Yes.
Before we get started, I would like to introduce Sergeant Bannerman. He just came in, retired out of our military, served two tours in Iraq, and just got back. So let's give him a hand.
Thank you very much, Coach Air Esquivel. And welcome home, soldier. Yes, and if we would, if Ms. Bannerman would please come forward, and Jill, if you please read the summary.
Thank you. House Bill 3391 creates a task force on military families. It directs the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and the Oregon Military Department to provide staff support to the task force. This has an emergency clause which is effective on passage.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. All right. My name is Stacey Bannerman, and I want to thank all of you for the invitation to speak today, and thank Co-Chair Esquivel for sponsoring HB 3391, an historic bill to support Oregon's military families. For every service member that deploys, it's estimated that six immediate family members, on average, are impacted. More than 13,000 Oregon National Guard troops have served overseas since 2001, leaving at least 78,000 Oregon military family members behind to deal with the stress and strain of deployment. And as the family members and primary unpaid caregivers of Oregon's nearly 350,000 veterans can attest, the war doesn't end when the troops come home. While improvements have been made, Oregon's military family members still struggle to find local health care providers that take TRICARE, especially in rural areas. They report that it's often impossible to find anyone, a therapist, neighbor, or friend, who understands what they're going through and will lend a helping hand. The number of military kids seeking mental health care has more than doubled since the start of the Iraq War. And I have spoken with Oregon Guard parents who tell me that their children suffer separation anxiety when their parent deploys, but all too often, schools, teachers, and other students don't even know that a kid in their class has a parent at war. And this is also true for Oregon's active duty military families who struggle with deployments and casualties, but are hundreds, if not thousands, of miles away from their loved one's post or duty station. A growing number of military spouses and children are suffering stress, anxiety, depression, and suicidal ideation. And those numbers are even higher in the Guard and Reserve families. I was at a forum this fall on strengthening Guard families. Just got the report yesterday. And when one of the chaplains in attendance at that forum got the call that the wife of one of the unit's deployed soldiers had been rushed to the emergency room after trying to kill herself. This January, speaking at a military suicide prevention conference next to her husband, Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Deborah Mullen said that Army leaders told her that they lack the ability to track suicide attempts by family members of Army personnel because there are too many. The current wars are producing unprecedented rates of post-combat mental health issues in returning troops and the highest physical wound-to-kill ratio ever. What this means is proportionately more families of veterans living with PTSD and or caring for a disabled veteran, and when the veteran is wounded, the whole family is hurt. Investigations into the mental health of wives of retired veterans found that spouses of combat veterans had high levels of distress, poor physical and psychological health over a lifetime, and greater social isolation than partners of non-combat veterans. A 2010 study, it was released in December, by the National Alliance for Caregiving, revealed that caregivers of severely disabled veterans report a stress-filled and largely isolated life that usually sees their own health and finances suffer. Compared with caregivers of non-veterans, those taking care of disabled veterans reported a much heavier burden with daily activities. 68% said they felt highly stressed, compared with 31% of caregivers of non-veteran adults. The Caregivers and Veterans Omnibus Health Services Act of 2010 authorized the VA to establish a wide range of new services to support certain caregivers of eligible post-9/11 veterans. This federally funded legislation will impact some of Oregon's caregivers of veterans, and they should be formally engaged in providing advice and reviewing activities and plans. Furthermore, the White House recently released a report titled Strengthening Our Military Families, Meeting America's Commitment, that identifies the key issues military families face and presents programs and resources that government agencies will launch over the next months and years. Now, major portions of this system-wide initiative will be operationalized here at the state level, and funding will be made available to various state agencies and departments, including Health and Human Services, Department of Agriculture, Defense, Military, others. And these are funding issues that will directly affect the level of service to Oregon's military families and should include the input and oversight of Oregon's military families. Those services must also be reflective of the differences between being an active duty family member living on a post with more than 40,000 other active duty troops and military families, and being the only guard family in a rural community of 4,000 civilians where you are an army of one. Modeled after veterans task forces, commissions, and advisory committees that already exist at virtually every level of government, the Military Family Task Force would really strengthen Fort Oregon's capacity to meet the needs of our military families during all phases of deployment. It will improve programs and services and resources for families and caregivers of our veterans, and help serve as an antidote to the epidemic of disconnection that exists between our military and civilian families. You know, for about a decade now, less than 1% of the population has carried 100% of the burden of two wars. And these wars are hallmarked by multiple lengthy combat tours, unprecedented deployments by Guard and Reservists, and the highest percentage ever of fighting forces, including women who are married with children. Designed to include military family members from all regions of the state of Oregon who represent different branches of the military and a variety of ages and experiences, such as a teenager whose parent deployed with the Oregon National Guard, the wife who is a caretaker of a disabled veteran, and the Gold Star parent. The task force will provide members of the assembly with expert witness and opinion on legislation, recommendations, and advice on current and future issues that could improve or influence the Oregon military's family programs, as well as the programs that include or support veterans' families at the VA and vet centers. The task force would also conduct town hall meetings, much as was done with the task force on veterans here a few years back, but conduct town hall meetings with military families throughout the state. It would assist with educating the public about the needs of Oregon's military families right there in their community and identifying opportunities for local citizen support. It would propose media and informational strategies to the Oregon military and the ODVA, provide advocacy support for military families, and make recommendations on community-based programs and tools and resources. Military families have needs, challenges, and issues that are clearly distinct from those of our troops and veterans, but they're nonetheless intertwined. Military families directly impact troop readiness, morale, resilience, reintegration, and recovery. Investing in and supporting military families is investing in and supporting the veterans in our troops. The military family, and especially the spouse, is essential to the war effort. Before, during, and after deployment, military family support, as well as the soldier knowing that their family is supported, is critical to mission readiness. It is a significant protective factor for that deployed soldier, airman, sailor, or marine, and it helps ameliorate combat stress. And when they come home, family support is essential to successful reintegration. The veteran's spouse, and sometimes the parent, is typically the primary unpaid caregiver of and advocate for the veteran. All else being equal, when a veteran is wounded, whether physically or psychologically, family support is the single most important determinant in the veteran's readjustment and recovery. And let's not forget the families whose loved one died in combat, because they're going to bear that burden the rest of their lives. Oregon has a demonstrated track record of leadership and innovative support for its troops and its veterans. And by establishing the country's first statewide military family task force, Oregon can once again lead the way for the nation and become a model of support for the families left behind right here in Oregon who serve and sacrifice silently, invisibly, while their loved ones are at war, and take care of our veterans when they come home. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bannerman, for your very thorough and impassioned testimony. It's greatly appreciated. Questions or comments from the committee? I'm not seeing any at this point. Thank you so very, very much for your statement.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming a very considerable distance to provide us with your testimony as well.
You're welcome. I had a great driver.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, Representative Wally Hicks. And Representative Hicks, if you just bear with me just for a moment. Representative Widener, we're going to get you on, and we're going to get you out of here in time. How much time do you think that you're going to need for the different bill? Okay. All right. Just for my planning. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Representative Wally Hicks. I represent House District 3. I'm from Josephine County. The importance of the people who are willing to don the uniform of our nation and go to some of the worst places in the world and do some of the hardest jobs imaginable is only at its clearest in the time of need. Similarly, the importance of the family to a veteran is only at its clearest in a time of need. The difference, however, is that while veterans go to war, war comes to the families. The unfortunate reality is we never really get to see ourselves as other people see us. And so, especially given the nature of the psychological injuries that our veterans are coming home with in larger and larger measure, the best, absolute best source of information about the very mission of this body here, this particular committee, and all the organizations surrounded around veterans is military families, the people who know the veterans best. The task force is, I think, the ideal way for families to gather their collective knowledge and harness it to do the absolute minimum of the work that we can for those who have risked it all on our behalf. That's really all I wanted to come here and say today. I welcome questions.
Representative Hicks, thank you very, very much. Want to recognize that you speak from firsthand authority on this, and we have followed Mac McDonald's lead in this committee, and would like to provide you an opportunity to tell us about your service.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I was a Marine. I enlisted in 1994 at the age of 17 and was appointed a couple years later to Annapolis. Graduated and was commissioned over 10 years ago and served in various places. I am a veteran of the Iraq War. I served in the first half of 2004 in the Green Zone, and I recall vividly the situation that the Oregon National Guard was in back around that time. It's not, I think, widely recognized the, frankly, disproportionate commitment that the National Guard, the Oregon National Guard, was making to that particular war effort. They were in a place called Camp Freedom its mission was to patrol Sadr City. This is a walled-off section of Baghdad that even Saddam had problems with for a number of years. And when the situation turned, frankly, unexpectedly, you know, the Oregon National Guard, and I wasn't in the National Guard, to reiterate, I was actually another part of Baghdad, but I do remember watching that situation tragically unfold. Our soldiers, I've said this in another committee in public safety, but, you know, our National Guard now is really exceptional at the missions that it undertakes. It really is. And I am not the slightest bit surprised, because the people who are serving now are experienced, literally battle-tested combat veterans. And, you know, if you see a National Guardsman, they're not paid to tell you what they've done, and chances are they never will. But I assure you, you're looking at somebody who has gone through an absolutely, well, probably an absolutely awful experience on some level. They'll never tell you that. And that's part of the problems I think we're seeing develop today. So, know who you're talking to when you see a National Guardsman. These people are the best Americans you're going to meet.
Thank you very, very much, thank you for your statement, and thank you for your service, and welcome to our committee. Questions or comments? Yes, Co-Chair Esquivel.
Just a comment. I would, first of all, like to thank you, Representative, for helping us with this bill and signing on to the bill. I'd like to thank the Bannermans for coming the long way that they have to bring out and point out, put sunlight on this very important ordeal that we need to come to grips with and get our arms around and support. Because the home support and the home front, like you explained, Representative, is probably one of the most important factors to you psychologically when you're in country. So, thank you.
Yes, Representative Matthews, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for your testimony, Representative Hicks. Great to have you, and thanks for your service. I'm curious. We've had task force in the past. In 2008, the task force generated 39 initiatives that came forward to legislature. So 2009 was a very good session for veterans. Out of 2009, we had the Veterans Reintegration Task Force that developed, and 17 initiatives came forward out of that. And so I'm signed on to this bill, so I'm very supportive of what we're trying to do. But when I look up, first of all, what I don't see in the bill is any detailed date of report, so I don't see that as kind of a first glance, and I'm curious about that. But the other thing is there anything in the past task force that we could pull, or perhaps people or momentum that we could use to continue this effort for our families? Have you been able to, and maybe Director Willis will talk about that, I see a head shaking there, but have you given that any thought?
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews. No, I haven't, but my hunch is this will be approached in an efficient military manner. And and success will be reinforced, and an efficient approach will be taken. So I'm confident that they'll be able to pull it together and come up with some good stuff.
Absolutely.
Representative Hicks is also very fast on his feet, too. Additional questions or comments?
Right.
Representative, thank you so very, very much. Appreciate your appearance here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
I'm going to close the public hearing only momentarily, and I'm going to make an explanation here in a minute. I'm going to close the public hearing momentarily for House Bill 3391. And folks, just by way of explanation, we have several members of the legislature that are in this room here today, and they are all very, very busy with committees. They're in here to do testimony, but they need to be back in their committees. So I'm asking you, the public, to work with us up here. We're going to be opening and closing different bills so that our members of the legislature can give their testimony. So bear with me. We're going to get around to all of you here, and we're going to make this work. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3335, and I'd like to call up, please, Representative Weider.
Thank you, Co-Chair Witt and Co-Chair Esquivel, and I think 3335 is going to tie in nicely with what you're trying to do. I sat on Veterans last time. I actually missed the committee. There's a lot of wonderful things that come out of this committee. So, but first and foremost, I am State Representative Jim Widener, House District 24, most of Yamhill County, a little bit of Polk County. And I want to thank the members of the Veterans and Emergency Service Committee for your time and consideration in regards to House Bill 3335. Chances are you or yourself, a close friend or family member, has been a soldier in the United States military. Although I myself am not a soldier, my son currently serving in our United States Air Force overseas, or my son currently is overseas at this time in the Air Force. After having the honor to serve on this committee last session, it was brought to my attention the vast and deep impacts that PTSD has on our young men and women who are serving. Because of these experiences, I have wanted to do something to display a small token of appreciation to those who are currently serving. A constituent had brought to my attention that an expansion of campsite privileges would mean a great deal to her and her husband, who together enjoy the outdoors whenever he returns to Oregon from serving overseas. This much-needed R&R allows them to decompress from the rigorous and continual stress placed upon both those who serve and their family members who sacrifice alongside them. My intent in this bill was to establish a placeholder, and the blanks in HB 3335 where restricted limits were to be identified, intent to facilitate discussion so we could collaboratively find a solution. I appreciate the input from both chairs and the committee administrator, Jill Petty, and I'm grateful to notify you that I will be introducing an amendment that reflects both the spirit and scope intended. The amendment would allow returning soldiers to have free access to state parks and yurts and horse-accessible campsites within the first 90 days of returning to Oregon for a total of 14 days. I feel that this bill will help improve the quality of life for Oregon soldiers, and I'm honored that this bill is having a hearing today. Again, I want to thank you for your time, consideration, and support for House Bill 3335. And the amendments we are continually to work on, we've been in communication with Jill and with the Parks Department because we want to make sure this is a bill that does go forward and doesn't get held up in the Ways and Means process, because I think we owe a small token of gratitude for those that are serving. And when they come back, one of the things we did in this committee last time was recognize family members and the stress on family members. And this is a way for a returning soldier, for part of the soft landing, I see it fitting into with him and his family, reconnecting to be able to take a tour around the state and spend time together for 10, 14 days or whatever is necessary for them to reunite over time.
Thank you very, very much. Representative Weider needs to be out of here momentarily. Any quick questions or comments? Representative Matthews.
Quick question, and I won't give the one that you pitched to me to give you. But thanks for your testimony today, Representative.
Is this a rig?
No. Is it your intent then, through amendment, to make this available to just active duty members only? Will it be a veterans, or will it be post-active duty within 24 months? Or, I mean, do you have any ideas on that?
It'll be active duty or returning soldiers from combat. So basically the Guard, if they've been overseas in combat, when they return, they would be able to take that time and go spend with their family at camp, state campgrounds, if they proceed or wish to.
Okay. Anything further? Not seeing anything. Representative, thank you very, very much for your appearance.
Chair Witt, if you want, I could take the extra time to let Rep. Matthews give the question that I asked him to give for me. So, actually, I think it was just kind of building me up a little bit. So.
Sounds like a sidebar. Thanks so very, very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I am going to now close the public hearing on House Bill 3335. And I am going to open a public hearing. And folks, everybody stand at ease. We're going to come back around full circle, but I'm going to get our legislators taken care of here. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution number 16. Jill, would you please tell us what that resolution is about?
HCR 16 memorializes the life of Colonel Kenneth Reusser for his service in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam.
And with that, I'd like to call forward, please, Representative Kenemer. And please feel free to bring up whomever you would so choose.
Thank you.
I believe we have a very distinguished guest with you today.
I think we do.
Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, nice to be with you. Bill Kenemer, State Representative for District 39, Canby, Oregon City areas. Today it's my pleasure to be here to honor Colonel Kenneth L. Reusser, a friend and an Oregon hero. He passed away back in June of last year. But I think we need to take a moment to, oh, and I should say I have his widow, Trudy, here. They were married for 35 years, and I'll let her speak if it's okay for just a moment after I'm done. But I think it's very appropriate to recognize the colonel because he is the most decorated Marine pilot in history, with 57 decorations, including two Navy Crosses, the Legion of Merit, five Distinguished Flying Crosses, 19 Air Medals, and four Purple Hearts. He flew a total of 213 combat missions, fighting in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, and was shot down five times during the three wars that he participated in. In his last battle, he was severely burned and spent a year in the hospital and retired after 28 years in the service. With me today is his widow, Trudy Reusser, and if you would, I'd just like her to say a few words, too.
Absolutely. Welcome. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all the work that you do as a committee, and especially Julie, who I've known and admired for some time. My husband...
Ms. Reusser, if I could interrupt, please, and ask you to introduce yourself for the public record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Trudy Reusser, and I am the widow of Colonel Kenneth L. Reusser.
Thank you very much.
Just to correct the record, he died in June of 2009. Okay. Of cancer. And what I would like to add today is that my husband's military accomplishments were well known and published quite a bit, but most people don't know what kind of a man he was. He was a very good man. He was a godly man. He was very humble. That's the adjective that's used most often about him by people who knew him when he was in the service. He gave the Lord credit for all of his accomplishments and his survival and his recovery from the many injuries. And he gave very generously of his time and his ability and his resources to a number of young people whom he rescued and just a whole range of ways in which he contributed. And after he had a serious stroke in 2004, His heroic way of dealing with everything was evident every day. He was the favorite patient of all his therapists, including me. And so thank you for honoring him. He probably would be embarrassed if he were here. And it's just, I think it's good for the community to have a hero in our midst, even though he's now in heaven. But I wanted to add something to your earlier discussion about the families of those who are deployed and those who are returning from combat. I'm an FRG with the National Guard and have responsibility for almost 100 families. And I love that job. I don't think we can ever do enough for our veterans, for our troops, and for the families of those. I don't think ever can do enough, and I love them very much. And so because of my husband's life and his attitude toward everyone else, toward other people, I really learned to fully appreciate that. So I concur with what was said earlier, and there are many vacant positions of FRGs. And so maybe there's a way this committee can publicize that fact, and maybe more people will come forward. It's a wonderful job, toughest job I ever loved. Thank you.
Thank you so very, very much. Questions or comments for our distinguished panel? Yes, please, Representative Patch.
Well, thank you for being here, and for you did such a great job. And I will say, you know, a lot of times, particularly after a spouse is gone or you've gone into retirement, you know, sometimes people walk away and move on with their life, and the fact that you've come back around, even though at this point your connection is to the military is severed through the passing of your husband, that you've wrapped back around and are involved is just truly wonderful. So thank you for doing that, and really, and behind every good soldier there's a wonderful spouse, so good job.
Thank you, Julie. But to me, all of our troops and all of our veterans are heroes, and especially those who gave their lives. And my husband always honored them most and always passed the compliments to them. Thank you.
Ms. Reiser, Trudy, if I might, thank you so very, very much. If you're able to hold on here, I think a congratulatory note will be forthcoming here very soon. I intend to hear the remaining witnesses straight away on this concurrent resolution.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Next, I'd like to call up Mac McDonald, please, and Bill Call.
My name is my name is Bill Call, and I'm a U.S. Marine, and naturally, and I'm certainly proud to be here today, and I appreciate very much listening to me for only a few seconds only. I want to add to Ken. Ken was I was a Marine enlisted man, and the thing I want to add to Ken is the fact that Ken was born in Cloverdale, Oregon, and we could almost call Ken the kid from Cloverdale, and he went to Cloverdale High School in Cloverdale, and I happened to follow. I was in the 1st Marine Division, the 3rd Marine Division, and several of our Marines here that went to school with Ken, and you know, he was a daredevil kind of guy. You know, just want to tell you what kind of guys we bring the Marine. He was a daredevil. If any of you have been through Cloverdale, recently, all you young people here, why you would notice the concrete bridge. That used to be a wooden bridge, great big high wooden bridge. Ken used to jump off that damn thing, and for 25 cents, you know, school. And, you know, he did all those, he's always doing crazy things, but he was a daredevil and a really good guy, you know, everybody liked him and so forth. And he did some different things and so forth. And was he a hero? Yeah. Most of our heroes in the Marine Corps, and not necessarily, not only was he part of a hero group. Most heroes in the Marine Corps are those fellows we left out in the battlefield. I want all of you to understand that. And heroes are the ones that we left out there. I might tell you that where I came in touch with Ken was only a couple of years ago, and Ken flew a different type of planes. And when I was in World War II, and I was in Korea, and I made the island of Guam, and I made the campaign at Iwo Jima, and in Korea, when back in Korea, I made the campaign at Chosin Reservoir. But at Chosin Reservoir, when we were way up there in North Korea and the Marines, we were trapped and so forth, and we were between a couple places called Haegareu and Kotori. This is, and just a few years ago when I met Ken, he and I nailed down exactly where he was at what time. And you may not, but he flew Corsairs. And at one time, our whole unit, we had around 7,000 Marines still left up in North Korea. We were trying to get out of that area up there. And he flew Corsairs. And those Corsairs, when we were trapped along in a line, I remember a line because I talked to Ken about this. He flew his Corsair commander group within 250 feet of us and clearing away. So he can almost say that he saved my butt up there and a lot of other Marines like me. So good guy. Yeah, he was a good guy. I just kind of want to point that out. And you know, you don't want to, he was not only in the World War II, he was in the Korean War, and also he was in Vietnam War. And there's very few, I don't have to be one of those, were in those three wars. And I certainly commend Ken. Good guy, both enlisted and an officer. We liked him a lot. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Matt McDonald. I, too, am a Marine. I first met Ken about 5 or 6 years ago. Highest decorated Marine in the state. And when you see him and talk to him, he's very quiet, unassuming, and just a nice guy. In the air, he was something different. He ran out of ammunition on one of his missions, saw a Japanese plane 2,000 feet below him, used his propeller to cut off the tail of that plane. I thank you for honoring a real American hero.
Thank you, Matt, very, very much. Thank you both so much. Questions or comments for our veteran panel? Thank you very, very much, gentlemen. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify today on HCR 16? I see no one else signed up, and I see no one else coming forward. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on HCR 16 and open a work session on HCR 16. Committee members, your pleasure.
Yep, I'll go.
Okay, Representative Parrish.
And you'll just have to forgive me on the wording here, but I do move that we would accept HCR 16 with a do pass recommendation and move it out to the floor.
All right, thank you very much, Representative Parrish. Moves HCR 16 to the House floor with a do pass recommendation. Are there any comments? Yes, Representative Boone.
I believe Colonel Rosser was one of my constituents.
Oh, my.
If he's from Cloverdale, that would be mine. So,
and if, I can't hear you, please.
I said I believe that Colonel Rosser is one of my, or was one of my constituents, because I have Cloverdale in my district.
Oh,
yep. And I believe that there's a statue on that bridge that he jumped from, and we were able to work with the county. There was some issue about placing something somewhere on either side of the guardrail, and this is a diversion, I know, but it's worth the story. I was at the tour of NOAA, the new National Oceanographic and Aeronautic Association's new digs down in Newport, and ran into one of the engineers on the job who was giving us a tour at the construction site. And I got to talking to him, and he goes, "Do you have any pole?" And I thought, "I don't know. What kind of pole do you need?" And so anyway, long story short, I made a call to Commissioner Mark Labhart in Tillamook County and said, "Can you fix this issue? There was an issue with this thing." And he says, "We're on it." I got their people on it, and that statue was allowed to sit there. So it's, you can see it. It's white and marble, I think, or something. It's a pretty big, heavy angel. And I think that's Ken right there on that bridge. So thanks for all you did to help with that.
Thank you very much, Representative Boone. Additional questions or comments? Yes, Representative Matthews, please.
I'll be brief, Mr. Chair. It's germane, but I recall that we had a chance to pass an HCR of a good friend of mine, General Fred Rosenbaum, at one point, and he had passed as well. And I know that we're going to have another issue where somebody's actually with us today or within, will be here to be honored. But I would just like us to just reflect a little bit about some of our veterans that have passed. And it's really unfortunate that they're not able, despite they'd be embarrassed, that we're not able to recognize them while they're with us. And that sometimes the process just doesn't allow it to. Maybe with annual sessions we'll get better. But I would like to say, out of all of our veterans that are out there, there are certainly a great many more that are worthy of recognition of this body. And it would sure be nice if we could start setting that standard for us as a legislature.
Thank you very, very much. And with that, seeing no further comments on to House Concurrent Resolution 16, are there any objections to the passage of this resolution? Seeing none, so ordered. Applause would be in order at this point. Thank you all very, very much. I am going to need, because this warrants it, a couple of carriers. And I would like to ask if perhaps Representatives Boone and Kenemer could co-carry this resolution.
I'd be honored.
Okay. Will that work? All right. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution number 16. Thank you very, very much. Trudy, congratulations. Okay, with that, I am going to reopen. Bear with me, folks. I am going to reopen a public hearing on House Bill 3391. And our next witness, please, Bob Biggs and Nat Dorm.
Good afternoon, committee, Mr. Chairman and Assistant Chairman. I think you'll remember we've appeared before. I am Reverend Robert Biggs, the state chairman of the Oregon State Grange Veterans Committee, serving the entire state of Oregon. I have with me today my vice chairman, who is Nathan Dorn. He may have some comments, but I'm teaching him how to come before you astute people and to talk with you without getting nervous. So anyway, however he can fill in. Well, first of all, I would like to say that I can remember when I came back from the Korean War as a very tired chaplain arriving back at Yahats, Oregon, having coming north from Bandon, Oregon, where I was born, familiar with the coast all along there, and remembering what it was like to come back as a veteran that was not really honored, except by the Grange and my high school. I was suffering from something that I didn't understand what it was, and I come to understand later, after some years of treatment, that it was post-trauma. I wanted so badly to have some place I could go and to do things. I was an old country boy that had gone to college and got a degree, but I didn't lose the country boy. And I still wanted to get out and go and do the different things that could be done, like these men will be able to take advantage of in this particular bill.
is so important that they have that. I know because I am a very active chaplain in the field right now. I talk with untold number from our committee viewpoint and also from my ministry viewpoint of men who are coming back. What you heard from that incredible testimony by the lady who introduced this bill is so true. Those people and those families are so disheveled in what they have been through that it is just absolutely taken care of a lot of problems. I think that our state, even though it does have some financial problems with our state parks, and those of you from the coast know about that, we have a heavy traffic on the coast, but I think that there's certainly some way that we can find a way to give this without testing our tremendous financial problems that we have. I think that's probably about what I would have to say, and I might ask my associate here to comment. He is a Native American heritage, and he certainly has been involved over in his community here across the river at Enterprise for many, many years, and he knows plenty about what the veterans are going through and have gone through.
Well, my name's Nathan Doan, and I'm a Vietnam veteran, 100% service-connected. I was in Vietnam in 68 and 69. I have congestive heart failure. I don't know how much longer I'm going to live. They said maybe not long. However, I want to get the word out that we need these programs for veterans. If you really stop and think how important veterans are, what they do, what they have to suffer when they come back from the war being ridiculed, going through 100 different plans, different families, to try to get something done. It's amazing. The two main groups in our country today that are overlooked are our seniors and our veterans. It's a disgrace to not take care of your veterans. It's a disgrace. And as long as I have to live, I will do everything I can within my power to help the veterans get the assistance they need. We're all people. We respect one another's titles. We may not respect people's lifestyles, but we respect their titles. But we all are God's creation. That's all I got.
You'll be hearing more from our committee on other issues, and I thank you, ladies and gentlemen, very, very much. And my associate, he did pretty good for the first time, didn't he?
Yeah, you're a heck of a wingman there. Gentlemen, why don't you just hang tight, and because we're going to put another bill up, and I saw both of your names on that.
Okay.
We'll get to you and just save you the trouble of going back and forth here. If you'll just hang tight. Any questions or comments for our panel? Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing any. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify at this point on House Bill 3391? I'm not seeing anyone. I'm therefore going to close a hearing on that bill. And I am going to reopen a hearing. Hold on. Let me catch up with my own paperwork here. I'm going to reopen a public hearing on House Bill 3335. Gentlemen, please. Before you testify, I was hasty the first time, and I'm going to ask our administrator to please tell us what the bill is about.
Thank you. House Bill 3335 requires State Parks and Recreation Commission to allow free use of state parks to individual campsites, including yurts, horse-accessible campsites, and day-use fee areas to veterans for a certain number of calendar days per month.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, yours once again, if you would please reintroduce yourselves for this bill.
I am Reverend Robert Biggs, the state chairman of the Oregon State Grange Veterans Committee, which serves the entire state of Oregon. Once again, thank you, panel, for having us to discuss this. I see that I kind of mixed part of my testimony I just gave mixed up with the two together, but you get the idea of what we're talking about. I have to say on the state parks that it's the most marvelous type of opportunity in nature for these families to gather together. That's a psychological thing. These children have been through so much, as we had an early testimony heard in this session today. And they need to get back with Dad and do things with Dad. Dad has been out of their life so long. As a former educator, I know exactly what the big problems in families is when father has been disrupted from the family situation. And certainly here, when they're off to war like that, to a situation that they cannot begin to understand why Dad's not home, they have scars that need to be healed and mended. And I want to tell you that state parks in Oregon are the finest we have in America. I've traveled this country extensively. I dread to think they'd have to go live in California and have the messes they have down there. And so let's push for that, and I ask you to do pass on that, and I think my friend might have some other comment. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to say just a little bit.
Nate, would you please reintroduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Nathan Doan. I'm vice chairman of the Grange of Veterans Committee.
Thank you.
Basically, I was 18 years old when I was in Vietnam. I got wounded 3 times in Vietnam. I came back to the state of Oregon when I was just a little bit over 19 years old. I was still just a kid. I didn't know much. Some of my friends that were married, that came back, that had children, there's things that the families have to go through that you don't see. For instance, the children, when they go to school, sometimes, and you know how cruel children can be sometimes, sometimes these kids take a lot of ridicule from other students when they say, oh, your dad's a soldier, that's too bad. And, you know, this is all emotional things that these kids have to go through. It's not just that they're away. The wife is without her husband, her companion. The kids are without their dad. Whenever a man goes through war and he comes back, it's like I told my mom, I said, don't wake me up standing above me. Wake me up shaking my feet, because I'll come out swinging. And I was very fortunate. I got with the right group of people when I came back. I didn't drink, I didn't drug, anything like that. And they helped me. And I was really blessed for that. But what I'm talking about the emotional stress that people have to go through, things you don't see. And these men coming back from war need to know in some way that this state is proud of them, that they are proud that they served for this. I served for Oklahoma because that's my home, but I grew up in a little town called West Staten, which is about 18 miles out. But I think that in our hearts, if we really search our hearts and want to do the right thing, I think this bill should be passed. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. And thank you both for your testimony and for your service. We got a chance to thank Bob once before.
Oh, thank
Nate,
you.
Thank you ever so much.
Thank you.
And certainly appreciate the fact that you've given up your valuable time to be here today and on behalf of all veterans. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you for all your good work you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thanks. God bless all.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much. I'd like to call up, please, Mac McDonald and Tim Wood.
Hi, Tim.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Tim Wood, the Director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and
did I hand that to you?
I provided some prepared testimony, which was really intended to address the bill before the bill sponsor had offered some amendments. So I will be very brief. I just kind of laid out in my testimony some of the programs that we have in Oregon Parks and Recreation Department right now related to veterans. We do a Veterans and War Memorials a grant program, which provides grants to local communities to honor veterans in their local communities. We also provide free admission and special programming at the Oregon State Fair each year for veterans. We provide a free camping and day use on the three veterans-related holidays of the year, Memorial Day, Independence Day, and Veterans Day. And we also provide free camping to veterans with service-connected disabilities each year. So those are some of the programs that we currently have. And the last piece of my testimony there talks to the fiscal impact that the bill as it was originally presented would very likely have on the department, and it is very significant. But Representative Widener has recognized that, as have many of you all, and I talked with Representative Widener after his testimony, and frankly I think we can probably craft some sort of a program to accomplish what Representative Widener would like to see accomplished with this bill, and we probably can do that through our own administrative rule authority. So we have agreed in the hallway here to have some further conversations and see how we might be able to put something together to accomplish what Representative Widener would like to see accomplished here.
Wonderful. I have heard from a couple of our committee members, I think, expressing very similar concerns, so I'm glad to see that we're going to see a great finish to this before we're done. Thank you very, very much. Mac, welcome back again.
Thank you, sir. Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Mac McDonald, the United Veterans of Oregon. I see the bill, and I have a insertion that I'd like to put in on line 23. After authorized before veterans, I'd like to put Oregon in there. And the reason for this is the state of Washington, the state of Idaho, does not at this time have a reciprocal agreement to allow Oregon veterans to go into their state parks and get a free pass. And this is something that I've already talked to Mr. Willis, Director of Veterans Affairs. He'll work with the head of both Idaho and Washington, California, and see if we can get a reciprocal agreement. But limiting to Oregon veterans is will have a fiscal impact onto it. Plus, I think Oregon first. And I think the amendment would be well taken by the Parks Department, because this gives them some space to maneuver and not have out-of-state people coming in using our parks for free.
Great. Mac, would you work with Ms. Petty to put that amendment together for us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. I think Representative Matthews first and Co-Chair Esquivel on deck.
I'll wave.
Swap them?
I'll wave. Let Co-Chair Esquivel go
okay.
And I'll pass.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is an amendment on the way on this particular bill, because there were some things that we felt rewording needed to be redone. I would suggest that you, Mac, if you would, just get with Representative Widener, and you get with Representative Widener and work on the amendment, because he does know he has an amendment coming, and he's already started to craft that, so you could craft it all in one amendment instead of having a couple of amendments.
And if you just keep Jill in the loop, that way both of us as co-chairs are on top of things too, because she takes very good care of us.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Further questions or comments? Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Any additional public testimony on House Bill 3335 this afternoon? Anyone wanting to testify? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3335. And Representative Parrish tells me that We need to get the folks up on House Bill 3248 here straight away before everybody's arms get totally exhausted here. so let me see here. I'll dig down in the pile and find that one.
That's about the Ranger.
No, this is the internet.
Sorry. Oh, that's the credit on the internet.
There we go.
I can't believe it.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3248.
Thank you. I appreciate the jump in order, but you got mamas back there with babies that are about to fall out of their arms, and so I want to get the show on the road a little bit for them. So I appreciate the consideration. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Julie Parrish. I'm the representative from House District 37, and I am bringing this bill forward not as a member of this body, but as the wife of a military member of our Oregon National Guard, and who just recently came back this past year from a deployment, and this is really bringing this issue forward for all of our spouses who remain behind during a deployment. And fortunately, I've already convinced four of you on this body to sign off on this. We could probably just move this on by. But there is a subsequent referral to our colleagues who are going to look at tax credits. And if it's going to be a challenge for them, I've brought a green sheet with me, then I would propose a companion bill for this that would say that anybody in tax credits who serves on that committee would be required to give up their cell phones and would be required to have all of their family communications happen out on the House floor in the public. And they'll only get 15 minutes to do that, and it doesn't matter who walks by and sees them have a conversation, intimate conversation with their family members, a fight with their spouse over finances, or any of the other family business that happens during the course of a deployment that is happening over the internet. Now, the problem with and why we're bringing this bill forward for families is that that is what it looks like for soldiers who we deploy overseas, is that unless they opt into buying the internet, so again, part of this proposed side bill for our tax credit colleagues would also say that they would need to pay $65 to $100 a month, and that we would, if they'd like to have private internet service here in the business to communicate with their families while they're here in this building serving our state. And that's exactly what our soldiers are doing when they go overseas. And I've got some folks behind me, families behind me, who would love to speak on this, but I think it is that imperative that we make sure that we keep families connected. These are soldiers and families who are Skyping in on Christmas morning with their parents. They are, again, having fights over checkbooks online. They are trying to solve all types of problems. And, you know, some of those problems, if we're not giving good communication and good access to keep those families going, result in a disproportionately higher divorce rate in this community than in the rest of the population. So communications is a terribly important part of family relationships, and to go for a year without, and that our federal government charges our soldiers for communications is just criminal in my mind, and I think our state has an obligation to take care of our Oregon soldiers and make something happen for these families. This is a hardship. A lot of our soldiers are citizen soldiers, so when they leave their civilian jobs, they're taking a pay cut. Their wives have to potentially stay home and leave their jobs, and now we're asking them to maintain separate households in terms of utility bills to keep connected to their families. So I would urge you to support this, but I'm going to make room for other folks who want to come up and speak to it unless you've got any questions.
Thank you very, very much. Comments for Representative Parrish? Yes, Co-Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to share one thing. When I was in Vietnam, I called home, and I remember it cost me $9 a minute, and I called for three minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't sound like much, $27, but I was only making $125 a month. So it was one-fifth of my pay to call my folks on Christmas. So I can sympathize with what you're saying.
That's right. Thank you. All right, I'm going to make room for other people to come share their stories.
Thank you very, very much. Let's see, we have three seats. One, two, three, four. Why don't I ask forward, please, Amanda Klassen, Donna Herr, and Jennifer Wagner. And I think we could maybe, do we have any one of those chairs loose that we could scoot another chair up here? There we go, thank you. I'd like to ask up also, please, Megan Lulay. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for coming. Have you decided among yourselves who's going to go first and what order?
Julie contacted me asking for a little bit of support. I'm sorry, I don't know how to address you, so I'll just call you all ma'am and sir because I work at an armory and that's what I do.
Okay.
Would
you please start by introducing yourself?
I'm sorry, I did that wrong right off the bat.
No, that's absolutely okay. We don't expect you to know the drill around here. So, and we'll ask the same thing for each of you as you go in turn. So sorry for interrupting you. Please go ahead.
My name is Donna Herr.
Uh-huh.
I am the Family Readiness Support Assistant. They call me a FRSA for the 41st Brigade. A FRSA is someone that works for the commander to ensure that his family program is within the regulations and also within his vision. And so what we basically do is make sure the commander's family program is operating.
Good.
And what I did is I contacted Amanda because she was in Salem and she currently has a husband deployed, and so I asked her to come and give some testimony. So I think I would like to start out a little bit. I did a little bit of research, and then I talked to some of our soldiers. We recently had the 41st Brigade return home, and they're struggling. They truly are. They're struggling probably more now than during the deployment. But Julie asked us to talk about communication with families during deployment, and I, as a mother, can tell you how important that phone call is, how important that communication is, especially with the news, to see him there. It's just like, you know, I have another week that I'm going to be good. In my heart was going to be good because I knew he was okay and he was safe. But one of the best things I heard was one of the soldiers who told me that in his such an abnormal environment that he was in, the one thing that was truly, truly important to him and made everything normal was that twice a week he would Skype home and he would play Itsy Bitsy Spider with his daughter. It cost a lot of money to play Itsy Bitsy Spider with his daughter.
Yes.
But that was the one thing that he looked forward to twice a week. Now, if you are a grown man walking around, big, brave soldier with a gun in a world, a hostile environment, actually, to play Itsy Bitsy Spider, he said it was worth every penny. So thank you. The second soldier told me his 14-year-old son was getting in trouble at school, and he was away, and he couldn't help. The wife was getting frustrated. They would talk over on the phone, and so what he was doing, he would call, get on the computer on Skype with his family, but he separated. One day a week was just he and his son. And they go over the homework. They go over the assignments. They go over curfew. They did everything. The son turned right around. He was taken care of. That daddy was taking care of his family at home because he was able to have that communication with his family. Wife is happy. Son was happy. Kids were happy. And a little tiny girl was happy playing Itsy Bitsy Spider. That's what I have to say, and thank you for listening.
Thank you so very, very much.
All right. Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Amanda Claussen. I am a volunteer coordinator with the Oregon National Guard's 1249th Engineer Battalion. My husband is Specialist Christopher Claussen, and he is currently in Afghanistan right now with that battalion. As well as being a wife of a deployed soldier, I'm a mother of two. I work with military families on a daily basis, solving various problems that arise. This can be as simple as giving a family the phone number for a resource, to teaching families about living on a budget. Over the past 3.5 years that my husband has been in the military, I have been working with families, and I believe I have a pretty good understanding of many of the issues that they face. Today I'm here to talk to you about the impact of internet communication on military families during deployment in light of this bill that is being discussed. Communication is important in any family for success. When a family can freely communicate, it greatly reduces conflict and stress on everyone. For military families, continuous communication is essential. Deployments add extreme stressors like combat, separation, emotional and financial issues, and for those of us left behind, the stress of becoming an instant single parent. And that makes this communication become absolutely vital. Enabling our soldiers to have internet access so that we can stay in touch by email, instant messaging, or video chat, like she said, Skype, will alleviate a lot of stress on and ultimately make the whole deployment and reintegration process easier for both the service members and the families. One issue that I have seen crop up regularly during both the deployment and reintegration is financial issues. Many of these problems stem from a lack of communication between the service member and their family. During a deployment, conflict surfaces as the service member is removed from how and where money is spent. Then the reintegration, during the reintegration, more conflict develops as the service member wants to be involved again, but there's resistance from the spouse who has been doing it on their own for the past year. If a family can stay in regular communication during about all of their financial planning during the deployment, they are that much more likely to be successful and have less conflict about their financial matters. Another reason I would like to see this bill pass is that having the ability to communicate with each other helps you get through those hard days and reminds each other that even though you are separated by 3,000 miles, you're not alone and you are still there to love and support each other. There will always be good days and bad days for both the service member and their spouse, but being able to talk to each other gives you something to look forward to when you can tell your spouse about it and encourage them. That regular communication is so important for both the service member and the families here at home. There are some days knowing I get to talk to my husband and hearing him tell me how much he loves me is all that gets me through a crazy day. From the service member's perspective, my husband has told me that being in more regular communication has helped him in many ways. Before, he was feeling like he was missing out on so much of his kids growing up and our family's life. He told me that being able to video chat with the kids and I has really helped because he actually gets to see them, talk to them, and stay up to date with their constant changes during a time of their life when they are growing up more each and every day. He said that feeling like he isn't missing out on anything here lets him focus more on the job that he has to do there. He said it's so nice to still be able to talk to me at the end of a long day and that I can still be there for him through good and bad. It makes the distance apart seem a little less overwhelming. He said that it greatly reduces his stress level having that contact. The impact on the children that deployment and communication has is the biggest issue. As I said earlier, I have two children, an almost 4-year-old son and an almost 2-year-old daughter who both adore their daddy. The first 2.5 months when my husband was gone and he didn't have internet access were really hard on them. I had poster-sized photos of Daddy made and hung them in the family room and took one with us when we would go places. They got to talk to him on the phone occasionally, but I will never forget the first time they got to video chat with him. Both of them completely lit up. They were so excited that it took a couple of minutes to get them calmed down enough that we could understand what they were even saying. It was amazing to see the difference in them once they were able to see Daddy and talk to him face-to-face on the computer. Now, I know that whenever they're having a really hard day, I just need to email my husband and let him know that my kids want to talk to him and we set up a time. It has made a huge impact on their behavior, which has helped my stress level and gives my husband greater peace of mind, which allows him to focus on his job over there. The behavior problems that my children were exhibiting are common among children of deployed families. They are confused and angry because they are young, they don't know how to deal with it, so they act out by lashing out at me or each other. During those first 2 months, they were having nightmares, feeling insecure, dealing with separation anxiety, and a whole bunch of other issues along the same lines. most of these issues completely stopped, or at the very least are a lot less frequent once we had those video chats on a regular basis. These young children are America's future, as citizens and leaders, and passing this bill will be an investment in theirs and our own future. I cannot emphasize enough how important communication is during a deployment. Having internet access for our service members has greatly improved this. However, as you know, not every family can afford to get this. Our families are spending $50 to $80 a month on internet here at home, and then having to spend an additional $70 to $100 a month for internet overseas. It's a stretch, but a lot of us have made it a priority because of all the benefits. Anything you can do to help offset this cost would make a huge difference in our military families' lives. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Who's next?
Sorry, I'll scoot back. It's okay. Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Esquivel, and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Wagoner, and I'm a military spouse and a former family readiness coordinator with the Oregon Army National Guard. My husband, Tom, recently returned from a tour of duty in Iraq with the 41st Brigade Combat Team. The purpose of my testimony today is to impress upon you the importance of our soldiers having internet access. While they are deployed, and to illustrate the added expense these soldiers incur for their necessary tool. Here are some examples of internet usage by Oregon soldiers while deployed. Communicating with family and friends. Use Facebook. Many soldiers keep in touch with their family and friends by posting on social media sites like Facebook and MySpace. It bridges the distance and makes the soldiers feel closer to home if they are included in the everyday lives of those closest to them. Skype. Telephone access overseas is very limited and can be quite expensive. Skype is a low or no-cost alternative the soldiers and their families use to talk or video chat. My husband and I use Skype while we opened presents on Christmas morning so he could see the kids and their reactions. Yahoo Messenger. This text messaging application allowed me to chat with Tom no matter the time of difference, as I was able to access his messages from my smartphone. It's communications with employers, emails and blogs. Especially in the National Guard, is it important that citizen soldiers maintain communication with their employers to make the reintegration process as smooth as possible. Distance learning. Community colleges. Many soldiers like to make use of their free time utilizing their GI Bill benefits to continue their education with various state colleges. Without internet access, these industrious soldiers would not be able to continue their education while they are in theater. Army correspondence courses and non-commissioned officer education systems. Additionally, the Army offers many courses available through their web portals so soldiers can continue with their professional education in order to become better leaders. Online banking. Bill pay. Our soldiers need to pay their bills, and online bill paying applications with their financial institutions allow them to stay current with mortgages, utility payments, tuition, and many other reoccurring payments. MyPay.gov is the Army requires soldiers to have their pay electronically submitted to their banks. Their advice of payment or leave and earning statements is accessed through MyPay.gov. And identity theft. Being able to access their account online is often the only way to check if there has been an identity theft on the soldier's financial accounts or credit reports. Current news and events, hometown newspapers, TV, and radio stations. Soldiers like to keep up to date with what is going on in their communities back home. With streaming video and audio, soldiers can listen or view local news or radio broadcasts. Also, many periodicals offer online versions. Communicating among teammates. Changes to meetings. My husband and his teammates would use Skype to communicate internal updates and changes to mission-related meetings and other notifications with their housing compounds. There's also the access to social services. ArmyOneSource.com. There has been a tremendous increase in the number of suicides and divorces within the ranks of the military. The Army has addressed this with providing free, confidential referrals and counseling for soldiers and families in need. Due to this confidential nature, many soldiers prefer to communicate their problems through the internet
rather than speaking with a military chaplain. It's legal and consumer affairs. Even though they are deployed, soldiers still must deal with the daily challenges we all face. Spouses often want to send documents to their deployed soldiers to be reviewed before financial decisions are made. By using email, soldiers can provide support to their spouses and not feel completely out of the loop. A typical Army sergeant's base salary is approximately $2,400 per month. The rates for internet access in Iraq and Afghanistan can range anywhere from $65 to $100 per month. That is nearly 3% of his or her base salary. Couple that with the average $50 per month to maintain internet access at home, and we are looking at over 5% of his or her base pay used for internet access. The soldiers understand the high cost of the commercial providers maintaining networks in a combat zone. They still pay for the service, as there is usually very limited access through the traditional morale, welfare, and recreation outlets on the forward operating bases. I have given you several examples of why soldiers need the internet while deployed. The cost of access is often a hardship for families on a tight budget. I appreciate your considering the provisions in this House bill and hope that you will pass the valuable legislature. The soldiers and their families would definitely benefit. I want to thank Representative Parrish for sponsoring this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Megan, it must be your up.
Ladies and gentlemen of the board, my name is Megan Lule. I, too, am also a family readiness support assistant for the 41st Brigade. I've been in my position for exactly 1 year. Prior to that, I was a spouse of a deployed soldier. My husband deployed with Charlie 7158 of the 82nd Brigade's Medevac Aviation Unit to Iraq. During that time, our firstborn was a month overdue and was not brought into this world until 3 weeks after he left for Iraq. I will say that having the communication was a vital success to having my husband see our daughter grow up. The first year of her life, he was able to watch her once a week and sometimes once every 3 weeks. And I will concur that the price of internet is outrageous. We currently can pay anywhere from $50 for a 6-gig internet access here in the United States. In Iraq, my husband paid up to $120 for a quarter of the speed of dial-up. It is absolutely outrageous. So we were spending close to $200 for internet every month. But to have that ability so that my husband could see his daughter grow up for the first year of her life was a vital necessity in our family. We were willing to pay and make the sacrifices. We had the financial capability to make that sacrifice. However, there are many families who cannot afford that, but they still make that sacrifice so that their families can have that ability to talk with their soldier. And it's not just families with children. It is also parents. It is the extended family members that want to have that constant contact with their soldier. And if we require our soldiers to be out of country for over a year to train in another state, I think it's vital that we give some credit to our families, to our soldiers, if they have to spend a good percentage of their base pay so that they could have constant communication with not only their family members, but also the outside world of which they, what we ask them to go into. I think it, I ask that this bill be passed.
Thank you very, very much, each and every one of you. And Representative Parrish, thank you for bringing this bill forward. Questions or comments for our panel? Yes, Representative Boone, please.
Thank you, and thanks all to you ladies. I've been watching your little girl back there. She's cute. This, to me, is just, it's a very small thing we can do to help. But, and I have to say, I bitch and moan about the number of emails I get here. But boy, I bet if you had as many as I had from your family, you'd just be in heaven. So I think it's really too bad we can't get our military. I see the BG back there. And I know it wouldn't be on your watch, but our higher end of things overseas to provide the kind of internet speed that you really should have. And I know what it's like to be overseas and try to talk on Skype, and I don't know if there's any other better programs, but that kind of thing is often a little bit iffy, but especially in those countries. And maybe that's something we can, maybe some of you, you're too young, but maybe some of the older families have kids 10, 12 years old who can be back out there, you know what I mean, figuring this out. So maybe the military needs to employ some 12-year-olds to do this. We have them upstairs here to help us out. But I totally agree with you, everything you said, and gosh, I forgot your name. It's not Amanda, but
Jennifer.
At the end. Yes. You gave a long list of uses that we take for granted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, reading the newspaper just to keep up, or sending an email or chatting, you know, and a big one is Facebook and things like that, where they don't have to interact if they don't want. They can like or unlike or whatever, but they can keep up with a lot of people at the same time in just a few mm-hmm. minutes. So it's really, I think it's like when I travel overseas, sometimes you get a little lonesome, and I'm not in any way saying I understand what they're going through, but I can imagine if I want to go into an internet cafe and check my email, they certainly do want to when they're gone for that long a period. So I don't know if we're going to vote on this today, but I'm ready to vote. As Representative Schopler would say, it's time to vote.
Unfortunately, Representative Boone, we don't have a works session scheduled for this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Do we?
Ready to vote.
Yes. Representative Matthews, please.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies. Appreciate the testimony today, and thanks for coming. Your kids are very well behaved, by the way. Like, I see those celebrities back there. I myself have three daughters. When I went to Grenada, I didn't have a family. I was simply alone. I was a young kid. Just calling my mom was a big deal, but hard to do. And back then it was snail mail, so all the news was 5 and 7, 8, 9 days late. Very supportive of this concept. And I want to just put this in context. We are talking about providing a tax credit for something you're paying for. But I want to ask another question. We're talking about some families that can't afford to do that. Is there a fund set up where people could donate to the cause, particularly for an Oregon military family? Have we talked about that? And the reason I ask is, you know, a lot of money flows through this building for political garb, gets tossed in the recycle bin every day. There sure seems to be better uses of money out there, and I would like to say, if you have something like that, send it our way and let us know what that could be, and perhaps we could further that through our community to try to get that going as well. For the families that can't afford it, and I understand, it's an expense. I was stopped today by a friend that's in the building, and he said his son was spending $70 a month, you know, to communicate this way, and it sounds like he was probably getting the lowest bid in the country. So thank you very much again, and I really appreciate it. But is there a fund, or is there not? Ever been discussed?
I think the best thing you could probably do is talk to our state family program director.
Okay.
She's out on a well-deserved vacation right now, but she would be the one to tell you that. The only thing I can think of, unless someone else can come up with something, is the emergency relief fund, but that is truly for emergencies. If somebody doesn't have the money to pay their rent and they're being removed from the home and you know they need that money for that.
Right.
So if you think about it, most of the resource agencies that we have and the people that are out there to assist the families during emergencies wouldn't even consider internet bills as being an emergency, because that's a
luxury,
a benefit, something that
you can do without,
and that is not what they consider to be an emergency. To me, it's an emergency.
Yeah.
Those kids need to see their parent. Those moms need to see their children. And to me, it is something vital, but if you get right down to it, it's fluff. but needed fluff.
Thank you.
Itsy bitsy spider fluff.
That's right. Well, and all of our service personnel all over the world are spread hither, thither, and yon, protecting all of us here back home. And we need to make sure that those communications are as top-notch as are our service personnel and their families back home. Representative Parrish.
Well, you know, I will add one thing, since Mark has done, my husband's done a lot of recruitment, and one of his main kind of mantras is retain the spouse, retain the soldier. So if you have these women, tell their husbands to get out of the Army. If it's get out of the Army or get a divorce, I think a lot of the men are going to pick get out of the Army over losing their wives. And so this is also not just a communication issue. There's a little bit of a retention issue here when you've got wives who are on second and third round deployments, and they're telling their husbands, get out because I'm done or I'm going to leave you. And so we want to make sure that, you know, we also are keeping our forces organized the right way. And these women can exert a lot of power over those men. And they say, get out. Those husbands are, can do, because they got a higher general to report to. So.
With that, ladies, thank you very, very much for some absolutely incredibly great testimony. Certainly appreciate that. With that, I'd like to call forward, please, General Caldwell. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
How are you?
Good afternoon.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. This is more to Representative Matthews' question, reference, what kind of systems are there out there for this sort of relief? And I completely support the bill. I think it's a great bill. I think it's something that we ought to be doing. Presently, there is no exact fund that we have that people can donate to. We do have a 501c3 emergency relief fund. It's used for variation of different items. I can tell you, as you probably well know, the last session of the Oregon Legislature provided us with $500,000 for a state relief fund, which is separate from the one I just mentioned, the 501c3. That fund is down below $100,000 right now. It will probably be expended by the time we get to July at a current rate. And I can tell you that every one of the requests that come to that fund, I see. And we have a system where we can turn it around usually in 48 hours at the most, usually in 24. And I would say that probably a third of those at least have something to do with telephone charges. People get over their head. They're not bad people. They don't mean to be doing the sort of things that end up happening, but there's a tremendous, and it's not with every person, that's for sure. And I think you saw today the quality of families that we're blessed with having in the Oregon National Guard, and they represent the lion's share of that. But occasionally we'll see some people that get in over their head because of bills that they just simply never anticipated. And this is a classic example of that. I have a brother right now who's in Iraq, and he's with our unit out of Eastern Oregon. And he's got four little kids, and he was telling me this just the other day when he called, and he happened to get on the government line, which saved him some money, but he said, the Internet's killing him. He said, it's just amazing what it costs to do it. And he said, otherwise you got to stand in line for 2 hours. And he says, you stand in line for 2 hours, you get maybe 5 minutes, and as your testimony indicated, somebody's looking over your shoulder, and he says it doesn't lend to a good conversation, particularly when you got four kids. So I think this is the right bill at the right time for the right reasons. I would suggest that if you did have willing contributors that wanted to submit some great contribution to our 501c3 fund, we've got the capability of siloing those monies to say this is for Internet, this is for X, this is for Y. We don't typically do that, but we certainly would in this instance. I might also mention that we've had a tremendous outpouring of goodwill from many, many citizens of Oregon over the last 8 years. And it ebbs and flows, of course, with the news and what's on the front page and what isn't. Just got to bring it up. There's a young lady who actually works at Franz Bread up in Portland, and she started this on her own. Her mother was a capital guide down here for a number of years. I don't know if she's still doing this or not, but every November, she calls me up and says, I'm sending the cards for guards. And she collects 5, 10, 15, whatever people want to do, and they send these. She always sends them to me, puts a press release out. I get my name all over the state of Oregon, send them to the general. And I always give them to the chaplains and say, you know where the need is. You give these cards to the people that need them. And we typically get $2,000 or $3,000 every November, December time frame just from one person who just does it because it's the good of her heart. And she has no children in the military, had none. I think her father was a military member in World War II. So that's the kind of thing we see all the time. We see a lot of this going on, and I think it helps a lot for these young families who are struggling through this. Again, I've seen one bad abuse of telephone and internet in 8 years. And that family had other issues that were going on. We put people like Donna Herr, who you just heard testify, and her team, and the volunteers, and they finally got their arms around this family, and we finally got it straightened out. But that was only one. And we've mobilized almost 14,000 Oregonians. So that kind of gives you the breadth of it. So that's all I'll say, unless you have any questions, but I thank you for hearing the bill, and thank you, Representative Parrish, for bringing it forward, and I think it will make a big difference. Hopefully we won't need it, but downstream, maybe we'll get lucky and won't need it.
Thank you very much, General Caldwell. Questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you very, very much. Folks, I've got a couple more bills, and I'd like a work session on one bill. I've got 20 minutes to do this, and I need your assistance in making it possible for me to get this work through. Bob and Nate, if you guys could pass on this bill, and I'll get you up for the next one, if that would work for you, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks very much, gentlemen. I appreciate that. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill, unless there's anybody else. Last call. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3248, and I am going to open a public hearing on HCR 15. And with that, I'd like, Jill, if you would please read us the resolution and ask that John Huddle come forward, please.
House Concurrent Resolution 15 honors Philip Chester Belfuel for his service in World War II.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs and committee members. I'm John Huddle. I am a Army veteran and active in veterans issues in Deschutes County. And I'm here to testify on behalf of Philip Phil Belafuel. Difficult name to pronounce, French-Canadian originally. I provided some written testimony in the past about this. As I stated then, Phil is not unique to that era. There were thousands, if not millions, of young men and women who served their country and their flag unswervingly. Phil, however, stood for something greater than just a young man from Massachusetts. He knew the horrors of war because his father was a mechanic for Captain Eddie Rickenbacker in World War I. Phil impressed me as a very intelligent man. I believe he could have selected a more safe occupation in the military than choosing the Marine Corps. As I provided in written testimony previously, Phil thought he was going to be drafted into the Army, and he decided he wanted to be in the Marine Corps. He also happened to like the uniform better. Phil joined the Marines shortly after the fighting 4th Marine Division was reactivated. Phil trained with them. He participated in all four island invasions. He was wounded on Saipan. He refused to quit his unit. He had the opportunity. Instead, he insisted on accompanying them to the invasion of Tinian and Iwo Jima. He carried his shrapnel to his grave. There was a tough fighting spirit in Phil that was evident even when he was bent over from age and terminally ill. And let me interject here that I started pushing for this memoriam when I learned that Phil was terminally ill. Other veterans were planning his funeral. Phil has no living relatives in Oregon, very few living in the world that we're aware of. But Phil looked death in the eye four times, or four separate invasions. He also looked death in the eye at the hospice. Phil and a Battle of Bulge survivor, also in the hospice, joked about who would win that race to death. Phil won. He departed this last Sunday at 045 hours. His friend Tom followed the next day. You know, we've taken for granted these men and women. They were our dads. They were our grandparents. They were our teachers, our uncles. And I felt it was important, not just for Phil, but for the other veterans. You know, I had the every Monday we meet in band at Jake's Restaurant. This last Monday there was 118 veterans there. I've sat next to veterans, young veterans, 23, came back. He'd had two tours in Afghanistan. Didn't feel appreciated, understood by his peers. There's a veteran from the Iraq War that works at the local grocery store that can't always come but misses it. This is all ages, from 90 to in their 20s. Phil helped start this Band of Brothers. And out of this, these veterans have sought help when they needed it. They share stories. They start talking about their experiences because, you know, for many, I think we assume that World War II veterans didn't suffer from PTSD, what I would call the ghosts of war, but they do. And Phil helped get that going. And there's just such a positive energy that comes out of those meetings. And veterans seeking help, veterans talking about how to get through the maze of bureaucracy of the VA. Phil's gravesite service will be a week from Saturday. His only family will be his fellow veterans. And I'm encouraging you to give a due pass to this bill honoring Phil. And his fellow veterans can draw some comfort that the state of Oregon, at least for a day, are also his family. Thank you.
John, thank you so very, very much for bringing this forward. We tried.
We did.
We tried to beat the Grim Reaper, didn't quite make it.
No. But, you know, Phil also knew that there was veterans that came to me and wanted to, he never got his Bronze Star, and we felt he deserved it. He asked me before he ended up having to go to the hospice, he says, "Why are you doing this?" And I said, "Well, because you're ornery, and you deserve it." And he was quite a guy.
Well, it's unfortunate that we were 2 days short.
Okay.
And I feel bad about that, but I feel really good that that you brought this forward and that we're about to honor not only the top brass, but a corporal who gave his all as well. So, John, thank you so very, very much. Questions or comments for Mr. Huddle, please? Yes, Representative
Matthews. Quick question. Could you give us the information, maybe perhaps to our committee administrator, of the event, the service date and time?
Yes, I can send that over. All I know at this point is the day. I don't think I have the information with me as where it hadn't been set yet as of Monday.
John, if you could provide that for Jill, and maybe she can pass that out to our committee.
Okay, appreciate that.
Anyone else who would like to, if you'd sit there, if you just okay. Remain right there, John, please. Anyone else that would like to testify on HCR 15? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on HCR 15 and open a work session on HCR 15. Committee members, your pleasure. Yes, Co-Chair Esquivel.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we adopt HCR 15 and send it to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Esquivel moves adoption of HCR 15. Due pass recommendation to the House floor. Questions or comments on that motion? Seeing none, are there any opposed? The resolution passes unanimously. Thank you very much. John, if you would, please carry a copy of this resolution back to the Band of Brothers in Central Oregon on behalf of this committee.
I would be honored to do so.
Thank you very much. Representative Esquivel.
Very quick, Mr. Chair. When we get this one and HCR 16, I would request that we do it in a parchment and give it to the widow and to the band of brothers.
Thank you very much, and I will carry this resolution to the floor myself.
Thank you
very much, John. And I think recognition of Mr. Val Fuel's service deserves a round of applause as well. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on HCR 15 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 74. Jill, if you'd please tell us what that bill is about.
Yes, Senate Bill 74 designates March 30th of every year as Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to call forward as our first witness, Jim Willis, please. And as Mr. Willis is coming forward, folks, we're running out of time here. I am going to have to hold over
SCR1
as well as the work session on 3205. And I apologize to any of you who, if you are here for those bills exclusively, at this point it's beyond my control. I've done my very best, folks. And with that, welcome Director Willis.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, I am Jim Willis, the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. You have my written testimony in front of you, so in the interest of time, I will simply tell you that since March 30th, 1973, when the last of our combat units were withdrawn from Vietnam, there has never been, either at the national level or the state level, an expression of welcome home to that generation of veterans, two of whom are directly in front of you today, myself and Representative Escoval. Well, we were able to move on with our lives. Many of our brothers and sisters were not. And tragically, as I testified in front of this committee before, we had 58,000 who lost their lives in that war, over 58,000. But we've had 130,000 who took their own lives since the end of that war. This is a long overdue welcome home for the Vietnam veterans generation, my brothers and sisters, who served with me. And I'm happy to tell you that yesterday, in the United States Senate, they passed a resolution to create March 30th as Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day at the national level. That has now left the United States Senate and gone to the United States House of Representatives, where I'm confident that it will pass. What I'm equally confident of is that through the good work of our Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs and this great committee in the House, that we will beat the United States Congress to creating this day in our state. And my hope is that with a successful passage on the House floor and then moving on to the governor, that we will actually be able to celebrate the first Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day this March 30th. Further, we have asked the governor's office for a signing ceremony, which we rarely do, but in this particular case, we've asked for such a ceremony. We're hoping that that occurs, where again, all my brothers and sisters can come to this state house and take part in the signing of this historic legislation. Let me simply close by saying that Oregon sent 118,000 sailors, airmen, Marines, and soldiers to Vietnam. 709 of those people did not return, and are on the memorial in Portland. Oregonians can not only embrace these often forgotten warriors, but also learn from our history, teach our children and their children the lessons from Vietnam, both good and bad. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very, very much, Jim. Thank you so much. Questions or comments for Director Willis? Jim, thank you very much.
We're gonna
appropriately welcome you and all the other Vietnam vets back.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative.
Yes.
And welcome home, Representative Escoval.
Thank you.
That's coming. Thank you very much. Bob Biggs and Nate Doan, please. And gentlemen, if you can make it as speedy as possible, we've got another committee that's moving in here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and all of you. Again, I am Reverend Robert Biggs, the happily serving as the Oregon State Grange Veterans Committee Chairman.
Thank you.
Along with my assistant, who is here now. I am almost overwhelmed that for so long these wonderful men that have served so much and been so ignored in their honor and their service. And I'm so grateful for our wonderful state chairman, the veterans of the state of Oregon, for finally getting this through. Out in my field, working, doing the duties that we do to support our veterans, we run into these men who have come back and have not been honored, as we often had with the Korean War, of which I was a part of. And it is good time that we unanimously get together and to push this through. I don't think anything else needs to be said, because it's been so well said by our state leader, Mr. Willis, and perhaps something from
I'll be real brief. My name is Nathan Doan. I'm vice chairman of the Veterans Committee of the Grange. Basically, when I went into the military, I signed up for the draft. I didn't care if people believed in the Vietnam War or not. In my heart, I lived in this country. I had a duty and a service to go and serve. So I went. I had a cousin that I grew up with. Didn't have to go. Had a mother only. Didn't have to go to Vietnam. Got drafted and went anyhow because he felt it was his duty. He got killed with 10 days to go. His grave is in Staten, Oregon. He didn't have to go. The things that we do in our lives that are in our heart helps us to do what we do. Our environment that we grow up in, the things that we're taught, helps us to be who we are. Whether it's war, I don't care if anybody else didn't believe in the Vietnam War, I felt I had an obligation. And I have to suffer with it for the rest of my life because it affected me. There are people that when I went to Vietnam, went on to college, got a college deferment. When I got out, I was wounded. I had to draw a disability. They kept going to college today. They make $200,000 a year. You know what I make? Not even anywhere close. But in my heart, until I leave this world, I'll believe in serving my country. And I believe that people should serve their country. The young people should have to go through programs to serve others in government or in private sector, one another, if they don't want to go into the military. But I will say this in closing. When I came back from Vietnam, my mom and dad sat down in the car looking at me for 2 hours and didn't know who I was, because I'd lost so much weight. When we went home, there was only the road that goes from Canby, the back road, 99. That's the only one that was there. Well, let me tell you about a little restaurant that sets up on top of the hill right out of Canby. I went in there in my uniform, and the people in there were just beautiful to me. The lady asked me what I wanted. I said, I think I'll take a hamburger. I haven't had one for a year. She built me one that high. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I didn't get any. No one was critical to me. Everybody was really, really nice. But I did get other areas. And, you know, people are different. The places you go are different. But it's like I mentioned before, and this is very, very important, that we look at people as God's creation. Don't look at what they own, what they have in their bank account, what their title is. I work, volunteer with hospice also. And I work with the dying. I have taken care of doctors, attorneys, you name it.
He closes up.
But you see, what they own and how much money they have doesn't mean anything. Yeah. That's all.
Thank you very, very much. Gentlemen, I appreciate your testimony, as we all do. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 74, open a work session on Senate Bill 74. Committee, your pleasure. Yes, Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate Bill 74 be sent to the House Board with a due pass recommendation.
Yes, Co-Chair Esquivel moves Senate Bill 74 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And with that, to each and every one of the Vietnam veterans, not only in this audience but across our state, welcome home. And with that, in honor of our own in-house Vietnam veteran, Co-Chair Esquivel, would you please carry this bill?
I'll try.
Thank you very much. Our work session is closed, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much. If everyone would please clean up the room as quickly as possible, we've got another committee moving in instantaneously. Thank you.
Do you want us to pick up our name?
No, we'll do it.